everybody to Jawanza for Life, also known as Health Wealth Divine. My name is Jawanza, and I'm really, really excited to have another opportunity to speak with you today and to bring you another powerful, powerful guest. You know why you tuned in today. You got the message. The word's gone out, and the people are calling in. And, you know, this is one of those shows that is very, very important. And it's exciting to be, for me personally, to be able to do a show like this, because I get to see a place that I've never been yet, okay, through the eyes of someone that's been many, 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 many times. And again, you know why you're listening today. So I'm going to get straight to my guest so that we can delve into this powerful, powerful interview. You know, 2018 and 2019, the end of this year and the beginning of next year, there's going to be an excursion going back to Ghana and going to Benin. And the host of that, or the guide to that, is going to be my special guest today, which is Dr. Orwa Ehi Metura Nkamit. And many of you know Dr. Nkamit. You've heard him on this show many times, or you've listened to him in workshops, or he is the Orwa of your particular nome. But for those who don't know Orwa Ehi Metura Nkamit, that's Dr. Nkamit, let me share a little bit about him. Dr. Nkamit has been a member of the Osirisat Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, or Paramount King, by Shechem Shechem, Dr. Rahu Nefa Amen, who's the chief priest and king of the Osirisat Society. Well, as Orwa, Dr. Nkamit is responsible for guiding the lives of Osirisat's members and the society's activities in Washington, Virginia, and Maryland. He's a member of the society's Carry Hair Priesthood and headed Osirisat's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University, and he's also a doctor. He received his doctorate degree several years ago, and so we are very, very honored to have him as, again, my guest today. He's the author of two awesome books, African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny, and also The Divine Kingship of Asante, a Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community. We're going to be telling you how you can get both of these books as well during the course of the interview. So now to my guest. Again, Dr. Nkamit has been a guest on the show many, many times. We've done different series on the 11 laws of God. We did series on the seven divisions of the spirit. We've done shows on the I Ching, and just countless other shows. So I encourage you and will encourage you to scroll down the archives and tell you how you can do that so that you can hear all of the shows with Dr. Amen and other priests and priestesses of the Osirisat Society. We just did an awesome show with Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'un Nefer Amen, on his latest work, escapes me the name, the title of it, Light on Kundalini. Awesome, awesome work, brand new work came out, and we did an awesome show on that. That's in the archives. We'll tell you all about that as well. But let me get to my special guest, Dr. Nkamit. Great to have you back. Fabulous, fabulous information I know we're going to hear today. Really appreciate you being my guest again today. Thank you for coming back on.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Wow, so there is going to be an excursion at the end of this year and going into the beginning of next year. Actually, 2019 or 2018 marks the 400th year of the our coming to these shores, and it's kind of like I don't want to use the word an anniversary because it's not, you know, an anniversary necessarily, but it is definitely an occasion to be marked. And with that, there's going to be a trip that you're actually going to be taking a group of people, those who want to go back to the motherland, back to Ghana and to Benin. But could you talk about the significance of this trip at this time, the year of the return? Could you talk about the significance of going back, because I know you've been to Africa many times. What makes this trip different than the others?
Thank you. Well, this correct the chronology. People say that the first Africans were sold into the U.S. in 1619 in Jamestown, Virginia. But the oldest historical record in terms of Africans being captured and sold in these what's today these United States was, I think, in 1565 in St. Augustine, Florida. But that was a Spanish colony. So, you know, since England won the war, he who wins the war writes the history. So those folks didn't exist. The first Africans, really, from his historical perspective, were captured and sold into Jamestown in 1619. But these Africans weren't actually captured by the British. Well, they were and they weren't. The Africans that were sold to Jamestown actually were from Angola, and they were stolen by the British from a Portuguese ship in the Caribbean. And then they brought them to Jamestown and sold them, you know, that began what's called the Triangle Trade in the U.S., where they kept the Africans to the colonies, and they get rum and sugar and raw spices and, you know, back and forth, et cetera. So that's why one of the Africans, these were all Angolan citizens, I guess would be the best word to say. That's why one of the Africans, when he was able to purchase his freedom, he named it farm down in Virginia, Angola. But that began the Holocaust, so to speak, well, at least in terms of the English participation. So 1619 brings it up to 2019, which marks 400 years. So those Africans were actually captured, taken out of off the African continent sometime in around May. They were captured and sold in the summer. In August, they were sold into Virginia. So my thought, there's several trips planned next year commemorating this year of return is being dubbed as. My thought was that I wanted to go back prior to leaving, so it's actually a pre-return return. And so I'm organizing a trip. So I spoke to some people that wanted to go. Organize a trip that's going to take place in December, at the end of December, December 29th through January 11th. We'll go to Ghana and to Benin. And in Ghana, we'll participate in a Seven Peace Festival up north, which we'll be with the guests of the king up north, Baku Naba. We'll travel around and see the sites. We'll visit some other important paramounts in the area. And then we'll go to Benin as well, and there we'll visit the Songhai Center. But while we're also in Benin, we'll be participating in the anniversary or the annual celebration of the National Festival, Religious Festival of Benin, on January the 10th. Benin is one of the few countries in Africa that still holds on to its traditions and culture, especially as it comes to the religion, openly. As a matter of fact, the state religion for Benin is Voodoo. So they're very clear about their roots and the importance of maintaining the roots and preparing the roots and cultivating the roots. And so they have a national festival every year, January 10th, for in celebration of the Voodoo holiday. So we'll be participating in that as well. So we'll be there doing those festivals. We'll also be visiting the Songhai Center. And I think we've talked about Songhai before. But this is a place that's phenomenal. It is truly a phenomenal place. And on the African continent, people would hardly believe that you can find a place where it's completely sustainable. They generate their own energy. They grow their own food. They make their own machinery to grow the food that they make. They purify water. I mean, this place is incredible. And so I like to take people to Benin anytime I take people to Africa. Because when you go to other parts of Africa, you'll see the potentials. But you can't see the method for solving or realizing the potential. When you go to Benin and visit Songhai, you see that another Africa is truly possible, and it's controlled by the African ethos, the African mindset, the African approach to it. When they build a center, Songhai Center, they're not building it from the perspective of the Western idea of economics or whatever. They're incorporating the traditional African idea, and everyone is involved in the process, and therefore it's successful. So it's not a top-down process, not a top-down philosophy. It's a bottom-up ingrained philosophy. It's indigenous philosophy. It's a genuine philosophy that supports Africa, supports its people, and produces things that Africa needs for itself.
Well, why do you think it's important to not only read about, but to see firsthand, the motherland, and to add that experience to your, for a person to add that experience to their life? Because it seems that, travel is good. I mean, travel is good. Wherever you travel, I mean, it's going to broaden your perspective on life. It's going to broaden, your knowledge. But because of what you just shared, even concerning Songhai and everything that's taking place there, we here who grew up here, the Africans in America who've never been to Africa, from the time we were young, were inundated with negative stereotypes, negative images of Africa, and people even to this day still hold a lot of the stereotypes that they grew up with because they haven't seen firsthand anything that would change their mindset. So could you talk for a moment about just the importance of not just reading about, because you have a lot of scholars out here that could tell you, could quote all the 50 countries, or could tell you all of the the presidents of the different countries, but have never been there, and as a result of their not having been there, they lack the perspective that someone like you has, who's been there many times. Could you talk about the difference or the need to not just read about it, but to go see firsthand for yourself, and what that experience has the potential to do for a person's perspective?
Well, from 2000 to 2010, many of the trips I took to Africa, I took youth, high school youth. And every one of those children that went, actually every person I've ever taken, period, but every one of those children, you're talking about the impact they can have. Mm-hmm. I meet students on the street, people that were students years ago on the streets, and they all tell me how that trip transformed their life. I had one young lady, this always reminds me of her. She was one of the people that was very much affected by the stuff that you were just examining. She refused to call herself black at that point, or mm-hmm. African. I mean, she had been through the psychological wringer in terms of what and how our people have been castigated. So she refused. I mean, I really had to. I don't remember how I got her to go on the trip in the first place, but I did get her to go. And we went, and midway through the trip, I remember this till the day I die. She came over to me and she said, "Orwa, I'm glad to be an African." And it literally just blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, she's just one of many. Everyone I've ever gone to Africa with has always come back with a renewed perspective. Because the important thing is you got to see for yourself. Because as long as you're letting someone else define your reality, you're going to be subjugated to what their definition is. As long as they're painting your picture of what you've seen, you're going to be conscribed, your thoughts are going to be conscribed, circumscribed by the images that they paint for us. And Africa has always been painted in a negative light because those who paint the pictures realize the potential and the power in the real force, and they do everything they can to keep us apart. As a matter of fact, it reminds me of another situation where, we have these refugees who come over here from different countries. And there was at one time a group of refugees that were coming from Somalia or Sudan, I forget which one it was, but it doesn't matter, same story, same situation. And so I met one of them. They were settled in Minnesota. And I met one of them somewhere. I don't remember. It wasn't in Minnesota. It was somewhere else at some point. And they recounted to me how when they were brought over here, the first thing that all of them were told was to not engage with African Americans. It's a part of the culture, acculturation process. They're all told, do not engage with African Americans. Because as long as they can keep us apart, then they can control it. It's the old thing of divide and conquer. But most of us, unfortunately, don't want to be with Africans anyway. So it's a very effective system that they put in place. So that's why I like to take people to Africa, so they can see for themselves. Well, sure, Africa has problems. Hell, we got problems here. You know, at least in Africa, I don't have to worry about the police walking down the street and worry about the police shooting me because I'm black. Or riding around the car worrying about the police shooting me because I'm black. Or you saw the news report recently about this young boy in Minnesota, in Wisconsin. Teenager, black teenager is in the car in the back seat. Two white women are driving, and supposedly, the police officers got a call or someone stopped on the street or something and said that there was a black guy who had kidnapped these two white women. They went, pulled the car over, pulled the young boy out of the car. So he's about 15 years old. He's actually the grandson of one of the white women in the front seat. And wow. The white woman was telling them, this is my grandson. I mean, they took the boy to the ring. And he was shaking. If he had flinched, they would have shot him.
Wow.
So you don't have to worry about that in Africa. Nobody's
going
to shoot you because you're black. So
You took the words right out of my mouth. Actually, you must have been reading my mind, because I was going to ask you about this, the connection between the people. And I think that between Africans and African Americans, or Africans in America, because oftentimes I think when Africans in America consider going to Africa, if it's not to visit, if it's not from a tourist perspective, it's to help, you know, to help build infrastructure, or, you know, help build schools or libraries, or, you know, help, you know, whatever the need is to be able to assist in projects in Africa. But in terms of the people, in terms of that connection, there's definitely, you know, and I'm sure it's you spoke to it, the indoctrination of the people before they get here. Do not, whatever you do, do not interact with African Americans. And it's still that divide, and it's clear. I mean, when we meet Africans from the motherland here, oftentimes there's a distance. And I remember speaking to a young lady once from Guinea who shared that over there, they watch these movies, you know, they watching Boys in the Hood, and, you know,
yep.
They watching the black gangster movies. And she was afraid to come here because of the movies that she saw. And her fear was that if I go to America, I'm going to get killed by a black person, you know. And fortunately, this happened. This one incident was actually, the lady's fears was reinforced. She was scared to come here. Her relatives told her, no, it's okay, come on, you'll be all right. It's not like they see in the movies. She got here, and within 1 week, she was robbed and went back home. Never to return. So if you could just talk about that. I'd like to just stay there for a moment, because, again, that connection between the people connection, and how we can, and how even trips like this can help affect, you know, that that distance that we see between our brothers and sisters from the motherland when we meet them here.
Well, that's a good point you bring up, Klaus. Unfortunately, that's what's exported in terms of us to Africa. Those kinds of movies, those kinds of the music videos, the gangster rap, all that kind of foolishness. And unfortunately, because everyone believes that America is the end-all, be-all, the creme de creme, the, you know, the golden city on the hill, the city on the hill, they begin to emulate that. It reminds me of a situation, I think I might have mentioned this to you once before. I was at a ceremony in Ghana, an installment ceremony, young man. I knew him, but I didn't know, I knew his cousin better. He was being installed as chief, And so I went outside. That is after the formal part of the ceremony. I went out on the street. People were walking by. And a young boy, must have been about 15, 16, I would guess, come walking down the street, and he had a T-shirt on. And I know the T-shirt had to come from America because it said on the T-shirt, "I am a lesbian." I'm proud to be a lesbian.
Wow.
And so I called him over and I said, "Young man, what's your shirt say?" He said, "You read it." I said, "You know what a lesbian is?" The man had no clue. Literally had no clue. But it's from America, so it's got to be good. So all that craziness that we do over here, that's the same kind of negative images that we create, that are created for us, that people pay people to create for us here, is promoted over there, and people are being trying to emulate that. But fortunately, when I go, for the most part, I'm engaged with people in the communities, with people who are practicing the culture, who are preserving the culture. Because the beauty of Africa, the reason why Africa has been such a hospitable place to visit, warm, people still there. I've never met anyone who went to Ghana and didn't come back and say he's the most hospitable people on the planet. But there's issues there, of course, and these immigrations of Western ideas is getting worse and worse. But still, we'll find it's a very largely safe place, very warm people, et cetera. But when I go, I engage with the people who are practicing the culture, traditional cultures, because ultimately that's what's going to save us as the people on both sides of the Atlantic, our ability to link back in with our traditional cultures. Because unfortunately we've been, we bought into other people's cultures, other people's ideas about religion, other people's ideas about politics, other people's ideas about organizations, social structure, etc. And the same kinds of problems that we're having here are beginning to show up and manifest in Africa because it's the culture that's the problem. You know, if you feed a fish and one fish out of the pond is sick, then something's wrong with the fish. But if you feed and all the fish are coming up with the same sickness, then something's wrong with the pond. And the pond is the Western culture that we're all being nurtured within through, and which is polluting our ideas, polluting our spirit, and causing all these decrepit ideas and behaviors within us. So our solution has to be a return to Africa, has to be a reclaiming of African culture, has to be ingrained in going back and tapping into our ancestral values and ways of life. Not that things don't need to change, not that things should change. What culture evolves. But by the same token, you have to keep the essence of what's valuable as you make the transformations in culture. So when we talk about the ideas that the great African thinkers have put forth in terms of Pan-Africanism, et cetera, it's still alive and well. We have to do it. But unfortunately, if we don't go there, we're not going to be able to see the potential of what's being talked about. If we don't, you know, literally we are... the reason why they want to keep us apart, because we're like the Trojan horse. Because we're here, we're in the West, we know the West, we've raised in the West, nurtured in the West. So we understand the problems, we understand the potential, we understand the plights, we understand the things that we can do to make forth. When we go there, the first thing everyone sees is the potential, the resources, the natural resources. You know, with the kind of capital that we have access to here, and the kind of resource they have there, is a powerful synergy that can take place, a powerful regeneration of our communities that can take place. So we're engaged in that process, trying to make this bridge, build this bridge between not just the culture, but also the applications. Because culture's base is foundational, but it can only take you so far. You have to be able to live within the culture. So we have to cultivate an economic system. But the economic system has to be rooted in the culture, too. We have to be rooted in the process and understanding that we have to look out for ourselves, we have to support ourselves, we have to build for ourselves. And as we build for ourselves, then other people can participate. But, you know, we have to take control of and organize and come together and build with ourselves. And people always talk about, you know, here, they always give the examples of, well, when the Koreans come here or the Chinese come here or whomever comes here. But no one is, unfortunately, we're not seeing the best example that links to us is the Ethiopians. When Ethiopians come here, they organize within the communities, and you find them supporting their own businesses because there's a cultural link there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have to begin to look at what our brothers are doing here and begin. See, the problem is we've been deculturized, so we don't have the kind of knit, close-knit communities that people, immigrants, have when they come here because they come from a place where the culture is ingrained and everyone's there. Our culture has been so bastardized that, you know, people think that wearing the pants off your bat is a part of our culture. So, you know, that's just how far we've gone, how far down we've gone. But it's not hopeless. I mean, it's about each of us awakening, becoming awake to the realities that are before us and moving with those realities. And trips like this are fundamentally integral to this process. And I like to, like I say, because, you know, people talk about going to Africa, they want to go on safaris and see the animals. That's cool. But the animals are suffering from the same problems that the people are suffering from, Western culture. You know, the reason why animals are going extinct, the reason why the lions and the elephants and the rhinos are going extinct, because Western man, cultural values, has gone over there and started slaughtering them. It's the same thing that's taking place everywhere, slaughtering black people in the streets, slaughtering rhino in the bush. It's the same mentality. And until we get to a point where we understand that that's what's wrong with us, that's what's wrong with the way we're living, that's what's wrong with our lives, and go back and link up back to our African traditions and values, we're going to be suffering the same realities.
You know, you mentioned going back and linking up with our African traditions and values. Could you talk for a moment about the spiritual return to Africa as well as the actual physical return? You talked a bit about the cultural piece, and, you know, that's important. All of us remember back in the 70s when, Black is Beautiful, you know, came out and people started wearing, you know, became proud of their, you know, their dark skin, their afros and dashikis were the norm for, Africans in America back then. But it seemed that some, you know, decided to take upon a spiritual outlook, and some of them went back spiritually. But the trinkets, I'll say the trinkets that this culture, the Western culture, provides is enticing to a lot of people. And so for those who would otherwise make a spiritual return, it's hard for them to disassociate themselves from the culture that offers so many trinkets, you know what I mean? So could you talk about the spiritual return, not to suggest that, you know, if you make a spiritual return to Africa that you can't, you know, have any, you know, that you can't have a nice car, or, you know, that you can't have a job that pays you money, good money, you know, but could you talk about, some people have actually sacrificed one for the other, you know, some people have decided that I can't do both. I can't make a spiritual return to Africa without having to relinquish some of the things that, you know, this country or this culture, you know, has to offer. Could you talk about the spiritual return to Africa and why that is important to make, as well as the physical return, and how even the physical return can actually be the impetus for the spiritual return?
Well, the spiritual return you're speaking of, unfortunately, unless you're ingrained in the culture and some traditions and deep into it, you're not even going to see it today. The spiritual return that we're talking about is rooted in African culture and history, in ancient Kemet. We also find it in the traditions and other traditions in Ghana. We also find it in the Bantu people in southern Africa, and the Zulu in southern Africa. And I'm sure it's there in other places, but these are the places that it's been documented. And the documentation I'm talking about is the understanding that we're not human beings, but we're divine beings, that we're We come to earth to recognize and realize and awaken the divinity within us and to make a heaven on earth, because that's where God dwells, in heaven. And God uses us to come into the world in order to create this heaven on earth. And until we get to that point, that's foundational in terms of understanding. Because how you see yourself will determine what you think you can accomplish, what you think you can go, where you think you're going to go, what you're going to be end up doing. If you believe that you cannot do mathematics, then you're not going to be able to do mathematics. If you accept the fact that, you know, you can't do this, swim, or whatever, then you're not going to be able to do it. So as long as we accept the fact that we're, I misspoke, as long as we accept the belief that we're human beings, then we're going to be limited in what we can accomplish, because human beings are limited. Human beings get emotional, human beings get angry, human beings react on their feelings, human beings, you know, think they're doing good things and they do end up making a mess with other things. Human beings create a lot. All the problems on earth are caused by human beings. So we want to solve the problems, and we got to bring something else to the table. And we got to go back to what our ancestors understood and taught and laid in within the spiritual philosophy, but also embedded in the culture, that we're not human beings, we're divine beings. And the purpose, our purpose on earth is to become an awakened divinity. And it's important that, I'm glad you brought this up, because, you know, when I go there, we want to embrace this idea, but we need to have people understand that this is the idea that's embedded in the culture itself, in the past culture. For example, you know, amongst the Akan, the Asante, and other people in Ghana, there was a practice, and Nyame is a term for supreme being in the language, and it was a practice that they used to do where every morning they would take some water from a tree altar that they call the Nyame Dua, or the tree of God. They take some water from God's tree. They put a bucket in the water, and when it rained, it would fall. Water would fall in there. So they take some of that water, and they would circle the forehead, on the forehead, and visualize themselves practicing what they call the Nyame Su. And what the Nyame Su means is the character of God. So each and every morning, before anyone went out to the world to farm or do business or whatever they was going to do, they would go in and they'd sit there and spend 15 minutes in visualization, seeing themselves addressing whatever and however they come across in that day's work as God would address and come across. And when you're doing that, now the forehead is very important. Right, we know about the so-called third eye, the forehead, etc.
Right.
But there's an ajna center there. And this is tying back into what Shagam was talking about last week on the interview. The ajna center is a center where the divine self resides in the body. Now, within the Akan tradition, they have what's called the... excuse me. They have this, the seat of God dwells in the head. But they didn't say specifically where in the head, but then every morning when they go and rub their forehead, they're linking, they're saying, this is linking me to God. This is a practice of God. So that's important. That's foundational, because those people then would not see themselves as human beings. They would see themselves as divine beings who are working through their human realm of experience to awaken the divinity within them. And that's how we have to see it, because if we only accept that we're human beings, then we have to accept everything that comes with it. But if we once we believe and once we practice, we understand that we're actually divine beings. We come to earth to provide God with the opportunity to manifest itself in the world. That's the only thing that differentiates us from all other creation. We are able to be the vehicle through which God can manifest itself in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In its fullness. God expresses itself through all things. But all things are cast forth the limitation of that thing itself. So when God is expressing himself to a bull, God's going to be bullheaded. When God expresses himself to a fly, God's going to be buzzing around. When God expresses himself to a leaf, God's going to be blowing the wind. When God expresses himself to the human being, then the fullness of that potential, the wisdom and the power and the presence of God can all manifest itself in its fullness. And so that's why we're here. That's our purpose in life. So when we take people to Africa, we take them for the understanding that, yes, African culture is important. African people are important. It's important to see African for itself. But we got to go deeper. Because unfortunately, these practices I'm talking about now, they're most people in Africa, in Ghana, aren't practicing anymore. So they're moving toward the Western models, Western ideas or Western beliefs. And as such, the stability of African cultures, the societies where people, there were fewer jails and people were getting married and staying in complex relationships for years, all that's falling apart because they're no longer tapping into the essence of their being, which is the divine being. They're buying into the Western models, the Western practices. People are hooking up at the clubs, etc., and you would get sober, and the next day you separate. So, you know, that's what's going on. And it's important
that
we go back.
Go ahead, brother.
No, I'm saying it's important that we go back and embrace the culture because it emboldens those who are there trying to preserve the culture. That people from here are coming over. I mean, I wear African clothes every day, period, wherever I am. But in Ghana, you very rarely see people in African clothes, unless it's a funeral or a wedding or a church day or whatever. In Benin, it's a different story. In Benin, because of the closeness to the culture and to the spiritual foundation of the culture, you see people all the time in Benin wearing African clothes, men and women. So, but it's important that we go back and embrace it, show people that the value's there, because that gives them the idea that, well, maybe what I've been told about the West isn't all that's cracked up to be. Maybe I have some value in what I'm doing here. Because if you don't preserve the land, then the value is going to be lost.
You know, it's so deep. I mean, this conversation that we're having is so deep because even when you talk about the African clothes, that makes me think, of course, similarly, the names. I mean, you've written a book, African Names. We can tell people how they can get that as well. The Ancient Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. I mean, I was looking at something recently, and there was a brother from, I believe it was Nigeria, and he was standing next to someone from France, a delegate, a representative from France, politician from France, and he was talking about, the brother from Nigeria was talking about how, you know, we don't need to depend on France, we need to be self-sufficient, we need to, you know, we can do this and we can do that, and as long as we, you know, are reliant upon foreign powers, you know, we're not going to be respected and so forth. And I heard everything the brother was saying, and although the words he was speaking could have been true, he was standing up there with a suit and a tie on. You know, and to me, although his words were, he was saying all of the right things, the attire that he wore, it was like, I wonder how the French person was taking what he was saying, you know what I mean? I wonder how the French person was receiving his message based on the fact that even the very clothes on his back weren't representing the words that he was speaking about self-reliance for his country and so forth. And I don't even remember what his name was. I don't remember if he had an African name or an American name. But just could you speak to that for a moment? Just even how that even speaks to the mindset and how. Even going back to Africa, taking a trip back to Africa, can help in the process of undoing the brainwashing that was done that would cause us to, you know, be ashamed to wear African clothes or ashamed to take on an African name.
Well, I didn't get from your story whether the French guy was white or black, but it doesn't matter if he was. Yeah, so he was saying, right on, brother, speak your truth, and why he was counting his money, because the man knows that the band got his clothes from him. So as long as you know, economics is important. If you don't support your own, then you're not going to have anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause, and that's really a part of the battle. I mean, it's a complete. We have to battle on all fronts. We have to battle spiritually. We have to battle socially. We have to battle economically. We have to battle financially, culturally, etc. But if unless we have the spiritual piece together, then we're going to get lost in the other battles. You know, because if you don't understand that what we're trying to do is to reclaim our divinity, then we're going to lose. You're going to lose. You can mass all the money you want, but as a human being, it's going to take you so far. You're going to end up killing yourself or dying or whatever. You're not going to promote. You're not going to build for your community. You're not going to build for your beyond you, who you are. So we have to really look at. Let's look at the complete package, you know, and that's why it's important to link up with people who are practicing the culture. And when I say the culture primarily is held tight by the social structure, and the social structure within many parts of Africa is the kingship structure, the kingship system. So those are the people that are trying to preserve and preserving the culture, the dress, the practices, etc. Because that's the system that our ancestors have been using for, you know, 5,000 years, successfully organizing our communities and surviving and thriving prior to invasions, etc. So, you know, we have to really understand that we have to speak on different languages, different ways. Now, there may be a time when you need to wear a suit. I haven't come across one yet, but I'm sure it's time to come up. But by the token, you know, you borrow that, you send it back. But we should be spending, because, and this is, I'm glad you brought this point up, because this is another very important point in terms of how they play with our minds and play with our resources. Now, you know that, you know, people donate clothes to Goodwill and places like that all the time, right? And we believe that when we take clothes to Goodwill, that we're helping some poor people around the country, right? When you go to Africa today, you'll find that there are people on the streets that are selling tons of used clothing that's been delivered there, which is coming from the U.S. and other places like that. Because people are donating clothes, think it's for a good cause, and the clothes are then being sold in foreign countries and being marketed out and sold to people. Now, there's a problem with that is that it undermines the traditional textile industries. So that's why, again, I talked about some few people wearing African clothes in Ghana, because you can buy these cheap clothes, these old used clothes, our used clothes, for a lot cheaper than you can pay for, and we're not talking about a lot of money, even at that, but it's still cheaper than what
and
you
not to
pay
mention
for.
The fact that they're from America, so that adds value in their minds to the cheap clothes.
Yeah, so it undermines, it destroys the culture, the economics, and the value within people's minds. So that's a real problem. We have to be more, which is, I'm glad you brought that up too, is another point I like to make. We have a lot of access to travel, places, etc. People go black people go all over the world. And it's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. But personally, my philosophy has been, it's always been, when I travel, I'm going someplace where there's black people primarily, and or cultures that linked up with black people, because ultimately our finances, what we do with our resources, whatever resources we have, is going to determine the kind of impact we have. And whenever we go to, if we go to England or wherever, then we're helping people that primarily aren't black. If we go to many of the islands, even though there's a lot of black people there, if you go, if you're staying in these hotels, et cetera, you're staying in facilities that are owned by black people. Black people may work in them, but the large part of the money, you can very, you can rarely fly on a black airlines now. Most of them are defunct. There's a few still in existence. So you take a trip. The airfare is going to the white folks. You'll stay in hotels that go are owned by white folks. You'll buy food in the hotels that's, again, supporting white folks. Another support is indigenous people living, working there, who earn their living by working in these places. That's true. But the bulk of the money is going out, not into our communities, which is why when I take trips, when I take groups on trips, I'd like to take them to people places where black people are in control of things, so our money can be a great support, not just indirectly, but directly to black people. So when I go, the airfare we have to pay, we can take South African Airlines. There's black people run South Africa now, so that's one benefit.
Mm-hmm.
We stay in places.
But what would you say to someone that, I'm sorry, well, excuse me, interrupting. I would like for you to finish your thought, but I had another question. I had a question to tag on to ask related to what you just said. I didn't want to interrupt your thought, though.
No, go ahead. I was just going to go to the litany of how our resources are directly impacting people, black people.
Okay. Now, what would you say to someone who says, okay, well, I thought that the, you know, because I just heard you mention, you know, that, you know, you go to places where there are black people, you want to support black people, and, you know, they're looking at the 11 laws of God and they're looking at the law of austerity and says, wait a minute, you know, I thought that, you know, the law of austerity states that we're all one, because there's going to be a lot of people to listen to this show, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I don't want them to leave the show thinking, you know what I mean, that, you know, that law doesn't apply, you know, that because we're all one, that doesn't negate the fact that there are some of us that are in worse states, you know, than others, and there are certain things that we can do to, you know, kind of rectify that. Could you speak to that for someone who might hear what you're saying and saying, well, if we're all one and, you know, that, you know, nothing and no one can be against us, then how would that, you know, apply to, you know, the statements that you just made relating to, you know, supporting black, you know, and so forth? Because there might be some who could be put off by that. You know, somebody, let's say, for example, somebody from another culture. Let's say somebody, not necessarily even European. It could be a Chinese person could listen to this show and be like, well, wait a minute. You know, I thought that if we're supposed to be one and promoting a world of oneness and peace and harmony amongst all races, you know, then how would you respond to that?
Well, fortunately, there's 11 laws. Osage is being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And let me ask you this question then. If I'm under the impression that I shouldn't support me first, then when I get my paycheck, I shouldn't pay my mortgage, I should pay yours. I shouldn't buy food for my house, I should buy food for you. I shouldn't feed my children, I should feed yours. So, mm-hmm. No. There's balance and equanimity and equality that must be put in place. So everything is relational. Everything is supported and interdependent and relational. So you always have to support yourself, preserve your situation before you can help someone else. So from the collective perspective, you know, there are foundations out here that give away money to people for different things. But the people that started those foundations, they didn't give away all their money. They built what they have, and then they donated a portion of what they built from generation of wealth, and they're helping others. So that's the same philosophy we have to apply. We have to understand mm-hmm. that we have to support ourselves, we have to build for ourselves, we have to protect ourselves, we have to build for our families. And while at the same time, while we're doing that, others are going to benefit
mm-hmm.
because we'll be able to share wealth with other people. Because it's not about it's not about color or race. It's about self-preservation. It's about supporting yourself, building for yourself, organizing for yourself. Now, ultimately, we understand that myself is inclusive of everyone, but you got to start where you are and then expand outward.
Awesome, man. So thank you. You said you were going to go down a litany of things. I just brought that up at the point you were about to go. Do you still have that thought in your mind? Do you still remember what points you were going to make on that?
Well, for example, on this particular trip, we're going to be traveling to South African Airlines. So the bulk of the airfare, South African Airlines owned by South Africans, which is a black-owned country, black-ran country today. So that money, the bulk of that money is supporting black people. When we stay in places in Ghana and Benin, we're staying with facilities that are owned by black people. We don't go there. There are Western-owned hotels, big hotels, five-star hotels, et cetera. And we don't stay there because, again, we try to keep the budgets affordable. But by the same token, we're trying to support people on the ground who are living there. So we stay in nice facilities, but they're owned by black people. When we travel around the country, you have to travel around and rent vehicles. People that own those vehicles are black people. When we eat food, we have black people prepare the food for us. So when we shop, we're buying and shopping with black people. So basically, just about 100% of the monies, you could say, are going in support of African people. And we're having a good time, too. So that's the beauty of that experience. So I try to import. I've been many places in the world. I've been to Brazil. I've been to Mexico. I've been to Europe. I've been, all over the United States. When I take groups, I try to make sure that there's something of value there that supports my people, supports the people engaged there. And so that's just in my personal philosophy. But we have to become more conscious of how we spend our money. I mean, we say it all the time, right? There's no business in the black community because, everybody, all the foreigners own business in the black communities and black people don't support business in the black community, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the reason why we haven't generated any wealth in this society is for those that very perspective. The reason why our net income is worse today than it was in 1968 is because of those factors. Because we're paying somebody else's rent as opposed to paying our own rent. We're paying for somebody else's school as opposed to paying for our own schools, et cetera.
Well, Brother Orwa, and I know we only have a few minutes left, but just some details about the trip, of how people can prepare for it. I mean, I don't want to assume everybody even knows what they need to do. I mean, of course, you're going to need a passport, correct?
You got to have a passport. That's true.
You got to have a passport.
You have a passport. Okay. You got to have yellow fever immunization.
Okay, you gotta have your yellow fever immunization?
Yes.
Okay. And where can they get that? Where can they get the yellow fever immunization? Just how would they go about? Just go to the local hospital and say, how do they do that? How do they get that?
Well, you gotta find someone, who has the vaccine, because not everybody carries the yellow fever vaccine, because it's not common over here. So there are travel clinics around the country, different people that supply these vaccinations for people who travel overseas. Some doctors can get them. Your family physician might be able to order it for you. So there's different ways to get it, but you can definitely get it. You got to get your passport. You got to get visas for the countries. So it's a process. But we guide we guide the person through the process. Prior to going, we cultivate them. Acculturate them to what the kinds of things they're going to be experiencing, the kinds of things they need to do to prepare, packing, things to take, things not to take, et cetera. We try to do a thorough job of preparing people for the experience. But there's only so much you can say. You got to really be there to really appreciate the value of it.
And that's going to be from December the 29th. You're leaving on the 29th, and
yes.
You'll be coming back on January the 11th?
That's right. Leaving out D.C. and South African Airlines.
The Year of Return, Excursion to Ghana and Benin, West Africa. Wow. There's going to be a lot of different things you're going to be going on there when you're there. You're going to be taking them to see the, I want to pronounce this right, the Samanpid, is that festival? The Samanpid Festival?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Samanpid, okay, festival. Could you tell us a little bit about that, what that's about?
Well, it's in the northern part of Ghana. In the Baku region, and it's a festival. It's like a yearly end-of-year festival of harvest, that kind of festival. I've been to this festival one time previously, and so you get a chance to experience northern culture. You'll find the people in different parts of the country, different cultures, different ethnic groups have different cultural expressions. So you'll get a different flavor for culture. There, different music, different dance, different musicians, different dress, et cetera. But you'll also get a chance to see, we don't often go up north because it's such an arduous trip. It takes about 12 hours from Kumasi to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a day in, it's a day out. So it takes a while. And because it's also, we have such limited time, and you want to get, you can't see everything. I've been to Ghana, 30 plus times. I have never seen every place. I haven't ever been in Ghana. But I try to take people to places that are going to have maximum impact, maximum reward. But just certain places you gotta go. You gotta go see the castles. You gotta go to Kumasi, the seat of the Asante Nation. We'll be going there. We'll be going to Cape Coast area where the castles are. We'll be going up north. We'll be going to the Volta region also in Ghana. And then we're going to travel to Benin too. And that's a day in and day out. So you spend a lot of time on the road. But, you could sit in one place and have a wonderful time for 2 weeks. Or you could go around to like 8 different places. And have 8 different experiences, which is what I like to do. I like to travel, I like to take people to see as much as they can, because you never know if it's when you will be able to get back. So,
If
you just go to Accra and you stay in Accra, then you'll see one part of Ghana. But there's so much more to the country, so I try to get people out of the city capital. We spend very little time in Accra, actually. There are things in Accra we like to visit, but. And we'd like to get out into the other parts of the country.
Wow. And for this whole package, we're talking about, what's the price for this?
$3,500
for 2 weeks. And everything get in that. Oh, my God. 2 countries.
Yeah. You won't find that price anyplace else. Have people Google trips, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll find that, this is a very modestly priced trip, especially for what the kinds of experience you're going to have.
Wow. And it could be, and this trip could actually truly be the trip of a lifetime. This could be one of those trips that you will remember forever, that you will remember until the day that you die and want to go back. Talk about the payment schedule, if you would. People that are interested in going, they have to have a particular amount down. Do they have to put a down payment by a particular time? How does that work?
Yeah, it's 3 installments. First installment is October 15th, November 15th, December 15th. It's $1,000 October 15th, $1,500 more November 15th, and its final 1,000 December 15th. And just for people who are listening to your show, as a bonus, the first 10 people who call, who register for the trip and pay their down payment and tell me that they heard about So Your Show, we're going to give them a 10% discount.
Wow. Heard that, everybody. You get 10% off. If you mention that you heard the information concerning the trip to Ghana and Benin on Jawanza for Life. Okay, so make sure you reference that, because
first
we live in a
people.
Time every first 10 people. So don't wait. Don't wait. You mess around and be like number 11 and be like, dang. take advantage of that. First 10 people that mention this show get a 10% discount. Now, does this include food and lodging? What does all this entail? Include, shall I say?
Yes. Transportation, 2 meals a day, on-the-ground transportation, admission to all sites, et cetera, guides, professional guides, et cetera. It doesn't include tipping.
2 meals a day.
Tipping drivers, et cetera.
I'm trying to think, is there something that people would normally think, what does it not include? Okay.
It doesn't include tips to drivers, tips to, I mean, we like normally we're going to have a driver who's with us for part of the trip or a large part of the trip. And, you know, he's driving, he's away from his family, so he's getting paid, but we also like to tip him as well. The tour guides, we might give a tip to them, people and the staff in the guest houses or hotels where we stay, you know, people customarily leave tips for them. It doesn't include those kind of things. Also, when we go to, like, events, if we're hosted by a king or queen mother or whatever, we may want to donate something to our community, because we'll be taking stuff. We'll ask people to bring stuff anyway that we're going to donate in mass, book educational supplies, that kind of stuff to different communities. But also we may do donations, tips to people in the communities for projects they may have going on or whatever. So, you know, it doesn't include those kind of things, but you don't have to worry about your place to sleep or eat or drive. It doesn't include your shopping. Definitely does not include your shopping. Definitely does not include your shopping.
So you take, you know, an extra thou or so just to make sure that you be able to, you know, get some things, you know, be generous when you go, you know, be generous, because again, the people over there, they're trying to make a living and sustain their families as well. And, you know, buy some things, you know, when you go over there, make sure that you take enough that you can be a blessing to the community that you're going to see. You know, you might want to get some African clothes or some things to bring back for people here, you know, so make sure that you take enough to cover that, because that's not included in the price of the trip. Brother Owa, you have really laid out a compelling case why people should go with you on the trip. For people that would like more information, is there a number they can contact or an email address?
Yes, the email address is RebuildAfricaTour, T-O-U-R. It's Rebuild, one word, RebuildAfricaTour at Gmail. And they can call, and let me see this number on the flyer. I think it might have my number on here.
Yes, it has yours.
Yeah, it has my number. They can call my number. The problem is I'm getting so many robocalls and people trying to sell stuff. I'm almost to the point I'm going to block my number from everybody. I don't know. But anyway, they can still call my number. Because, you know, I mean, I get calls. We're all getting them. These people, these infomercial calls and carrying on. And there's one group. You know, they'll be blocking in one part of the country, they'll call you from another part of the country. It's incredible. But,
so should they just use the email address if they want to get in contact? If they have questions.
Use the email address and or text message. That's even better. If they text me, then I'll know what they're calling about. And then not a problem. I still answer most of my calls, so I never know who's calling, but they're very short calls most often. As soon as they say, "Can you click up?"
Will you give your number for the people that need to text, that would text you?
Yeah, go ahead. 202-497-2499. 4972-2499.
Okay, that's 202-497-2499. You can text Orwa if you would like to get more information about the trip. And again, could you please give the web address the email address again for those who would prefer to email?
Rebuild Africa Tour, T-O-U-R, one word, at Gmail.
Everybody, for $3,500, you can have the time, the experience of a lifetime. And when you think about it, that's not really a lot of money, especially when you compare it to other, I guess, tours that Orwell was mentioning. This is very modestly priced. You get to help people who look like you, okay, assist them in their everyday, you know, living. They're trying to make a living too. And, I mean, to be able to be a blessing and to be blessed at the same time, I mean, what more can you ask for? Brother Orwell, any parting words? Is there anything that you haven't shared about the excursion that you would like to share before we go?
Well, no. I'd just like to see as many people as possible on this trip. And I have other trips planned. You know, I do these trips periodically. So, you know, if the timing doesn't work to this one, you know, keep your ears tuned to Jawanza, and we'll let you know when the next one is coming up.
Absolutely. By the way, before you go, Orwell, how can people get your two books, African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny, and The Divine Kingship of Asante, A Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community?
Well, they can email me at Enkamit, Enkamit, .phd@gmail.com. And I can we can transact it that way. They can buy the Divine Kingship book on Amazon. They can also buy African Names on Amazon. I saw somebody was selling it for like $200-some. But I'm only selling for $19.95. So it's better to come to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, my special guest today has been Orwell, Dr. Orwell A. Medurain, Comedies Paramount, King of the Washington, D.C., region of the Osara Society, and the information that you shared today, Orwell, is fabulous. I mean, for those who ever wanted to go, you know, now's the time to go. Okay, so start saving now. And if you can't make it this time, we're going to definitely keep you informed on when the next time is. Brother Orwell, thank you so much. I'm going to make a few announcements. I know that the fall equinox is coming up in a couple of days, and so I want everybody to know that Hekshem Su Heru, Shekhameh Mateah, did a awesome interview on the it was actually titled Understanding and Preparing for the Fall Equinox. That was in 2015. That was preparing for a workshop that was then. But the information that he gave is timeless. Okay, so definitely go back. That was on September the 11th, 2015. You can actually scroll down the archives. Click on that show, 9/11/2015. Special guest was Hekshem Su Heru, Shekhameh Mateah. He was talking about understanding and preparing for the fall equinox. Okay, so again, Brother Orwell, I know you got to run. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be my guest today. And again, I encourage everybody, make sure that you give Orwell a call or text, and definitely contact him by email if you'd like more information. Make sure that you make this trip, okay, because it's going to be the trip of a lifetime. Brother Orwell, I'm going to make a couple more announcements, but I don't want to hold you. So thank you so much for your time today.
Okay, again, thank you. Take care.
Thank you, Etapu. Again, everybody, my special guest today is Orwell Hehi, Dr. Orwell Hehi Medurain, Comet, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C., region of the Osara Set Society. Got a couple of announcements to make, okay? Want to make sure that you understand that on September the 25th, that's Tuesday, September the 25th, that's this upcoming Tuesday, Orwell Tahuti Kamo is going to be my special guest, okay? There's going to be a fall, Kundalini Yoga Intensive in Philadelphia, okay? And we're going to be talking about that on this Tuesday coming up. So mark your calendars and tell somebody, okay? This Tuesday upcoming, September the 25th, from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Normally the shows are at 7 at night, but this show is going to be from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Again, my special guest is going to be Orwell Am Tahuti Kamo. We're going to be talking about the Fall Kundalini Yoga Intensive. Again, make sure you mark your calendar. That's going to be this Tuesday, okay? Also, to everybody listening, if you have not followed the show, when I talk about the show, I mean this particular blog talk station, Juwan's for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. You can do so just by clicking, and if you do that, you will be notified of the date, the time, the guest, and the topic. And that way, you don't miss it. You don't miss, for example, Orwa Abdulhudi Kamo or Dr. Orwa Hehi Medaran comment. Also, want to make sure before I go, Dr. Ra'u Nefa Amen, Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'u Nefa Amen, for those of you who don't know, he has a new book out, okay? And it's called Light on Kundalini Yoga. Now, we just did an interview on that book, okay? That was in preparation for a book signing that he did in Washington, D.C., but the show, if you want to hear it in the archives, was on September the 10th. So if you just scroll down the archives to September the 10th, it's on the first page of the archives, you will see that interview with Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'u Nefa Amen. You want to click that, okay? He gets into what the book is about. He gives us an overview of the book. Now, you're going to get the book, right? I mean, because the overview is so that you have an understanding of what went into the writing of the book, okay, and what's in the book, okay. But in order for you to benefit from the book, you got to do more than listen to the show. You got to get the book, all right? So definitely go back, listen to that show, all right? Light on Kundalini Yoga with Shechem Shechem, Dr. Ra'u Nefa Amen. That was on September the 10th in the archives. Brand new book, fresh off the presses, okay? So you want to make sure that you get that. And for all of the listeners who are following the show, again, I want to say thank you to Tu'au for taking the time to and grow. We're all trying to grow together. We're all trying to learn. We're all trying to be divine. And it's obvious by the fact that, you know, you've actually followed the show and that you tune in and that you listen to the show. I just want to encourage you to share the links with other people. That is so important. We're in the month of, or shall I say, in the faculty of Ma'at. And sharing is one of the hallmarks, for lack of a better term, of Ma'at. So you definitely want to share this information, because how are you listening to the show right now? Somebody shared the information with you. You either got it through a text, you got it on Facebook. Somehow somebody shared this information with you. So won't you share it with someone else so that they can grow as well? Because we're trying to make this world divine. We have the potential to do it because we're divine by nature, right? So sharing should come natural. So, again, thank you so much for those who have shared the link and share the shows on a regular basis. Dwau, thank you so much for that. That is so much appreciated. So I hope you enjoyed the show today, and I hope that you will be giving Dr. Orwa Hehi Medaran Comet a text, or if you need more information to see what you can do to make sure that you are on that plane when they go to Ghana and Benin. Now, you want to make sure, of course, again, that you get your shots that are required. You're definitely going to need a passport, okay? So find out what information you need to find out so that you can take care of that business so that you can be ready to go when the plane takes off, all right? Okay, so again, thank you so much for your time. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? It's a poo.